If you would like to open your Bible to Matthew chapter 7. Matthew chapter 7. The church that I came here from did not have the monitor up front. And so I couldn't read off of the thing the times that I was up there. And the little trick I learned to at least know how my slides were advancing was I could see the reflection of the screen in the windows at the back. And I've noticed here this morning, I can't hear. So I will be looking backwards some this morning too, like Roy, but you can forgive me as we go along. In Matthew chapter 7, we have the parable of something that we know pretty well, the wise and foolish builders. And we learned a little something about building, which if you're not a gardener or a farmer, and there have been a lot of farming and gardening type parables, this might be a welcome change for you. Something that seems kind of common sense, something that involves building instead of growing. And maybe you can learn something a little easier from this kind of parable. I think it's very interesting that Jesus shifts through different types of things with his parables to make sure that the stories get across to the biggest crowd possible. This morning, we'll begin in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 24, where Matthew writes, "Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock." And we start with this description of what the wise man is. The wise man is the person who doesn't just hear these things, but he hears these things and he puts them into practice, which I think immediately will call for us to ask the question, what are these things? What is he talking about? Who hears these things that he said? And this parable Matthew places in the setting of the Sermon on the Mount. And so I think if we will flip back in our Bibles for a minute, and these will not be on screen, and we'll kind of run through fairly quickly, but beginning at the beginning of chapter 5, we see the things that he's talking about that we need to hear and put into practice. And first of all, he begins, if you have headings in your chapters, with the Beatitudes. And we may have remembered those somewhere along the way, or we may have had them on a bookmark or up on a piece of art on our wall. But the basic message behind the Beatitudes is that there are a lot of things the world would say to strive for, and those are fine, but a lot of the challenges we might face up to is actually where we find a lot of our blessings. And some of the things the world would say are negatives are things that God can use in positive ways. And then we have a section that talks about salt and light. And it talks about the idea that we are to be the salt and the light in this world. Which is to say, the world around us doesn't look exactly the way God would like for it to look. And because of that, we have an opportunity to stand out. And I don't know if you have ever been in that situation where you have stood out. I have several times along the way. I was thinking about this the other day, the idea of standing out and not fitting in. I remember the first time as a youth minister, I walked into a middle school for lunch. And they would, where we came from, where I did youth ministry, they'd allow us to come in at lunchtime and hang out with our kids there at middle school. And when you are a 30-something-year-old guy, and you walk into this land of all these middle schoolers and you're not a teacher there, the entire cafeteria stopped for a moment. It was a murmur of sound and everything, and then it just went silent, and everyone's head turned toward me at the door, and then there was another little murmur of sound. And I stood there for a moment thinking, I want to be anywhere other than right here, right now. I don't like to stand out. I don't like to be embarrassed. I don't like to... which is funny, because here I am in front of you, week after week after week. This is not me. This is not the way my personality operates. And so because of that, the idea of standing out, it's almost terrifying in a way. And I think for a lot of Christians, we view it in that way. We just want to fit in and not be noticed. We just want to blend into the background. We don't want to stick out a whole lot. But Jesus says we're to be salt and we're to be light, which is to say we are to be noticed for what it is we're doing. Hopefully we don't revel in that. Hopefully we don't hold that over people. But at the same time, if we are not living lives that are noticeably different, we've missed something along the way. So we're to be salt and light. And then he says, don't think that I've come to get rid of all this law that we've had to this point. I've come to fulfill it. And so these commands that we have had are ones that you're going to continue to keep. And then he gets a little more complex. And he says, you know it's wrong not to murder. And I would imagine as we go through our legal system, as we go through the Ten Commandments, we could look at something like murder and all come to an agreement that, yeah, that's bad. That's not something that people should do, and if they do, there's a punishment that goes with that. But he takes it a step further and says, beyond murder, I don't want you to get angry with each other. What? I don't want you to get angry with each other? I look at this this arch up here, and I look at, if you've not been in the gym, it's a lighted, tinted wonderland this weekend for the wedding. And I went back in my mind to wedding planning and wedding setup in my own life. And lots of the ones that I have seen along the way, being a minister and having performed some weddings, those can become, if you are not careful, tense times. Because you have a very particular way you would like for things to be done. And for the ladies especially, you have dreamed of this since you were a little girl. And it's supposed to look just so. And when everything doesn't come together the way that it should, I went to a wedding of a good friend in the Washington, D.C. area. And it was this beautiful wedding. Everything was just perfect. We went, and there were about 200 people there. They fed all 200 people a huge meal. We went to this Italian restaurant in Georgetown, and they had appetizers, and they had full courses, and they had every dessert the restaurant made on all these tables. And I remember looking at all this and thinking, first of all, I can't imagine what this must have cost, because that's the way my mind works. And then secondly, this is the most incredible thing I've ever been a part of, and it never hit me until someone told me later there was no wedding cake. And the reason there was no wedding cake was because the wedding baker had on her calendar the next Saturday. And the bride was devastated that there was no wedding cake. Now, I had had so many Italian desserts, I didn't care. And it was all good. And most of the guests there, I think, probably wouldn't have even thought of it until it came time for when you're supposed to cut the cake and all of those things. And there in the corner of the room is a round table with nothing on it. And to talk to the bride later, she was slightly angry about that, and with good reason. How many opportunities in life do we have to get angry? We don't have to seek those out. They find us. And Jesus says, I don't want you to hold on to that anger. And we might have come into it feeling like, well, I haven't killed anyone, so I'm doing pretty good. But how many times have you gotten angry with somebody in the last week, in the last day, this morning? How many times have we gotten angry? And then he goes further. You've heard it said, do not commit adultery. I tell you not even to have lust. Live in a culture that is built on lust in a lot of ways. The lust of things we desire, the lust of people we desire, what you will see on billboards, what you will see on television, things you will see advertised that have nothing to do with the woman and what she's wearing, and yet there she is. Don't even have lust in your heart. It says that people can divorce by giving a decree of divorce, and then he says, now I want to take it a step further, just if it's for marital unfaithfulness. I enjoyed a lot talking with Josh and Jamie before the wedding. And we had a few times where we sat down and got together and just talk about marriage and what that's like and the ups and the downs that come with that. And one of the things we talked quite a bit about was what makes Christians different is we have a different baseline when it comes to marriage. And for a lot of our world, if you get tired of that, it's just an easy out. It's not a hard thing to get out of. But when it comes to Christianity, how much are we willing to fight our way through? How much are we willing to try to make it work? And if we are not willing to at least try a little harder than the world around us, then again, we're missing out on something. Because if you look around you, if you're not married and you find some married folks, they will tell you it's not always easy. It's not always perfect, but it's something worth working for. And then he says, you've heard about oaths, but I tell you, let your word be your word. You don't have to have a bunch of fancy oaths. You say yes, it means yes. You say no, it means no. Then you've heard an eye for an eye. All right, somebody hits me, I can hit them back. That's how it should work. But I tell you, if he hits you on one side, turn the other cheek and let him hit you again. It's not the way we do things, is it? It's not the way America says to do things for us. We take up for ourselves, we fight back, All those things were instilled with us in us when we were small. And Jesus says, turn the other cheek. You have heard it said, love your neighbor. And we've talked about that quite a bit in here. But I tell you to love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. And I've mentioned before when we talked through the Sermon on the Mount, I'm feeling pretty good when I can make it to neutral with my enemies. Just get past the hate to, I'm just not going to feel anything there. He says, no, love. Love and pray for them. And then he says in chapter 6, as he begins that chapter, when you give, don't do it to be seen. Don't announce it with trumpets. Don't let everyone know what's going on here. Just give quietly. In a lot of ways, we miss out on two things there, because for a lot of us, we're not giving the way we should give. And even more than that, when we do, we want to make sure people know that we're doing it. We like the notoriety that comes with it. We like the appreciation that comes with it. And Jesus would say, don't do it for those reasons. And then we talked about this in the high school class this morning. Prayer. And notice he starts that section not with if you pray, but with when you pray. And for a lot of us, just that when would be the beginning of the challenge. Are we praying to God? Are we doing it regularly? And then when we do, is it just some kind of a form prayer? Does it take on the same pattern every time, or is there meaning to it? Are we really having a conversation with God? And something we talked about in class this morning is, that doesn't mean it has to be 6 minutes and 30 seconds every time, or 30 minutes. We can set aside a minute and talk to God about the things that are on our heart. And what if we do that a few times throughout the day? How much different would our prayer life be? Is our prayer just constant asking for stuff? Or asking for healing? Or are we thankful to God for what he does? Do we acknowledge how great he is? Are we praying for those around us? Are we, as he just closed the previous section, are we praying for our enemies? And then he continues about fasting, which is something most of us have ignored altogether. This is a cultural thing that, you know, we, whatever excuses we may have, an awful lot of talk in the New Testament about fasting for us to just completely ignore it. And then if we do fast, can we do that on our own without announcing it? Or do we have to let everyone know about it? I think about this with the prayer and the fasting. I saw a funny video online a week or two ago that was about, it was a satire, and it was the first person to run a marathon and never tell anyone about it. And if you know a marathon runner, you know exactly what I'm talking about, because if you know a marathon runner, they've got the 26.2 thing on their windshield, and they will let you know about the marathon, and they'll post about it on social media, and their training and all that stuff. And believe me, if I could run a marathon, I'd be doing all of those things too. I'd want to make sure you knew about it and you would hear all about it. Are we living our Christianity in that kind of a way where it's just, we've got to make sure everybody knows everything we're doing and how holy we are? Or are we doing these things because that's what God would have us to do? Because that's what living the Christian life is all about. And so when you fast, don't make faces and don't tell everybody how much you're suffering, but fast because you're doing it for God. And then he continues that we need to lay up our treasures in heaven, not on earth. Spend a lot of time working for treasures on earth, saving up our stuff, our money, our retirement, our homes, our cars. And he says, are you laying up treasure in heaven? Is that what is important to you? And then part of why I think we spend so much time on the treasures on earth idea in the next section here is, which we've got to stop worrying about things that we can't change. Birds of the air, crops of the field, do you think they sit around worrying? No, God provides, and God will provide for us. And then he tells us the one verse that every non-Christian on earth knows in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 1, do not judge. Do not judge, or you too will be judged. And yet, just a little bit further down in this chapter, he talks about how trees bear fruit, and you will know what kind of tree it is by the fruit that it bears. And so, even though we're not being judgmental, at the same time, we can see what people are about, and people can see what we're about. In between, he tells us to ask, to always seek after him. He tells us that there will be a lot of folks that want to get into the kingdom, and a small way to get there, and fewer coming, and all of that leads us to the passage we're looking at this morning. The wise builder builds his house on the rock. That is where the good foundation is to be found. And we understand that when it comes to building, yet too many times we don't start with the kind of foundation that we need to begin with. He says, this wise man built it there, and then when the rain comes down, the streams rose and the winds blew and beat against that house, it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. And what is that rock for us? That rock is Jesus. It's the way we learned that song when we were kids. The wise man built his house upon the rock. The rains came tumbling down and the floods came up and the house stood firm. Is Jesus our foundation in life for what we do? Because if he is, and what he's just described is true, then the things we read about in Matthew 5 through 7 should look a lot like the lives that we're living. And if they don't, we need to step back and take another look at that. Which parts of this sermon are we struggling with? Not my sermon, his sermon. Are we struggling with anger? Are we struggling with lust? Are we struggling with forgiveness? Are we struggling with a willingness to ask him? Are we struggling in prayer? Wherever it might be, if we are not who we need to be in those places, then the wise man does something about it. I came out of my apartment on Thursday evening, and I noticed that the way my tire was turned on the front of my wife's car, which I got to drive last week while she was out of town, I felt very important, got to drive the nice car. On the front of that tire, I saw a screw sticking out of the tire. It was fully flush in there, and the tire wasn't leaking, nothing had gone off, no alarms or anything like that. And I thought to myself, I have to go pick my family up in Portland at the airport the next day. I really didn't plan on my schedule to go to a tire place and do anything like that on Friday. What should I do? Now, I don't know how long that screw has been in the tire because this just happens to be the time I've seen it because my wheel was turned that way. Could have happened this morning. Could have happened 3 weeks ago. My tire's not lost any air in the meantime. Should I just go ahead and drive to Portland? And I thought to myself, it's not the wise thing to do. The wise thing to do would be to go somewhere who fixes tires and say, there's the screw in the tire, and can you fix that? And to spend the hour and a half wandering around Costco, which is okay anyway, while they do it, and then to have my tire repaired and to know what's going to work when I go. And when it comes to practical things of life, most of the time we do that. Now, occasionally we put it off, and then usually we regret it later, and it's a bigger project than it would have been. But for most of us, we could look through this Sermon on the Mount and see very quickly, I'm pretty good in these three spots. And then a lot of times what we'll do is we will really get pretty happy about those three areas. We'll be like, yes, I am there. I am praying for my enemies. Most people don't do that. Look how great I am. But instead, we need to look realistically at those and realize I'm not all that great at these four. And now, am I going to be content to not be all that great at those four, or am I going to do something about it? And Jesus would say the wise man is going to do something about it. And this morning, I think a lot of us find ourselves there. We know what it is we should do. The way James will put it is, the person that knows what it is he should not do and still does it sins. We know better. And yet, what do we do about it? He continues, but everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. We know better. We understand what a good foundation is and what a bad foundation is. I understand that driving with that screw in the tire for very long is not a good idea. There are a lot of things in life that we understand are not a good idea, and do we continue to do those things? And for a lot of our world, the answer is yes. We keep doing those same dumb things over and over and over again. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the wind blew and beat against the house, and it fell with a great crash. Of course it did. I mean, what else would it do? And I think when I look at this story, I always think of in terms of the coast. I love the coast. I grew up near the coast and was landlocked in Arkansas for a long time, and then came out here and I love the coast all over again. There's something about that nearness to the water that people seek out. And so if you want to buy a piece of property that's 2 miles off the coast and it's an acre, you're going to pay one price. If you're going to buy a piece of beachfront property that's that same acre, you're probably going to pay a very different price because you're by the coast. And then you have a whole discussion within yourself of how close to the coast is close enough. because there's danger that comes with that too. Here, it's in the way of erosion on those hillsides. It's in the way in the tsunamis that you see all the signs for. Where I come from on the Gulf Coast, it's hurricanes. And you know that if you're far enough inland, that surge is never going to get to you. But if you're far enough inland, you can't see the water. And so you have this grand discussion. And I don't know if you followed the story, but this is a home in Rockaway Beach, which is up the coast from us. It is the home of Dr. Dang, who I believe is a dentist in the Portland area. This has been in the news earlier last month. Dr. Dang's house was 50 feet away from the coast when he built it. As the coast has eroded over the last decade in waves and patterns and all of those things, he is now 8 feet away from the coast. And he's a little worried about this million-dollar house that he's built. Now, the residents of Rockaway Beach, the ones that interviewed in the paper at least, say he should have known better. How close to the coast are you going to build? Dr. Dang, as he was interviewed, said, I checked with everybody. I checked with the people who clear all these things, and they said where I was building was okay. And so what he's trying to do is get something called riffraff, which is not the bad part of town, but it's stuff you put out there that helps the waves not get to your house. And the community doesn't want to do that because they like the pretty beach the way it is. And so there's a legal battle going on in Rockaway Beach about what's going to happen with this guy's house. And he knows without the riffraff, eventually his house will be gone and swept into the sea. Did he know better? Did he not? I don't know. Whose story do you believe? I don't know. But for us, I think there are times that we know better than what we do. And the question for us is, what are we going to do about it? Are we going to continue to build houses on sand, or are we going to build our house on the rock? When Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowd were amazed at his teaching because he taught as one who had authority, not as their teachers of the law. He taught as one with authority. It's so simple, yet so profound what he was saying. This is not incredibly complex, and you look at it and you think, well, these teachers of the law that came along before him, really, why couldn't they get this kind of message too? Because it just makes good sense. But as Jesus comes, he understands what it is to live the human life. He understands how the human life was designed to be lived because he was there when humanity was designed. He was there to watch it created, and he came here to show us how it can be done. And for each of us, we have the opportunity to follow that pattern or follow one that doesn't make sense. And I hope this morning that you will think for a moment about, do you want to be wise or do you want to be foolish? Because most likely no one is going to get in your face and tell you that you're being foolish. We don't want to press that hard. We don't want to scare you away. We can see sometimes the downfall that is on its way, probably much more clearly than we can see in our own lives. Are we going to be wise this morning or are we going to be foolish? And if we're going to be wise, that begins with foundation. And if our foundation has a problem, we fix it now. We don't let it go because that whole house can come crumbling down. This morning, if your foundation is off, you are probably not alone. I would guess there are a lot of us that feel like our foundation needs a little repair from time to time. And that's why we have a family around us to help us do that. This morning, if you have been living foolishly and following the wrong patterns, think about stopping that today. Think about the things, the patterns you get into, the ways that you can fix that. And this morning, let's be people who are going to fix instead of people who are going to continue on doing things the way we've been doing them. If there are things we can pray about in your life, if you need to be baptized into him, whatever needs you may have, please come while we stand and sing.